You're listening to Food Integrity Now with your host, Carol Gervais. Hello and welcome to Food Integrity Now. I'm Carol Gervais. I'm your host today. At Food Integrity Now, we envision a world without GMOs, a thriving world where our food is safe for our children and our grandchildren. If you share this vision, go to our website and join us. Our show today is brought to you by Biolumina Spirulina, one of the finest whole food products in the world. Hi, it's Carol again. I don't endorse many products, but Biolumina Spirulina is one product that I use and I highly endorse. Spirulina is called a superfood because of its high nutrient content. It has been proven that you could actually live on this product. Biolumina is the premium spirulina. It contains a high level of phycocyanidin and is a powerful antioxidant. There's also a lot of evidence that spirulina is a radiation protectant and cleanser. To find out more about Biolumina, go to www.newphoenixrising.com/beingwell or click on the link on the show page. I think you're really going to love this product. My guest today is Wisconsin dairy farmer Vernon Hershberger. I'm really happy to have him on the show today because I want him to share his story. Many of you are familiar with that name. Vernon, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate you taking an interest in what we do and what's been going on, I guess.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that. Let's start at the beginning and let's let our listeners know a little bit about you and your farm in Wisconsin.
Okay. We have a family of 10 children here, and we grew up Amish, both me and my wife, and we left the Amish faith about 5 years ago. We moved out from Ohio, bought this 157 acres here in Wisconsin to basically for the reason of, you know, raising our family on the farm. And this all happened back in 1998 when we bought the farm and started farming organically. And from there, it just went to we had requests for raw milk. We just believed in, you know, helping people out and letting them get milk from the farm. And that just kind of grew by word of mouth. We had never even thought of starting a business like this. It just grew by word of mouth from 2003 up until the present day.
So let's talk a little bit about that. So Wisconsin is a state where you cannot buy raw milk in a grocery store. Is that correct?
That's correct. It's illegal to distribute raw milk. The way the statute reads, you can't even give it to your neighbor for no charge at all.
Tell us a little bit about what you were doing.
Well, I had a few meetings with the Ag Department back in 2003 and 2004, where they explained, you know, how the law reads and how they interpret the law. And, I came away with this idea from what they said is that, you know, anybody who owns a cow or worked for a farmer who owns the cow can get that cow's milk. So we basically just wrote up a form where people are part ownerships, part ownership of the cows, of all the animals on the farm, actually, through a leaseholding contract. Then all the food that is grown on the farm is actually entitled to them. So, yeah, we have a price tag on all the products. But basically, that's just to show everyone, you know, if I take this pound of butter home to eat it, you know, this is the amount of money that will have to be put back into the farm in order to keep the farm a viable and healthy financial future for, you know, to produce more of this butter or yogurt or milk. We formed this private club that leases all our livestock. It's just, you know, we have a big, long lease agreement with this private club, and then people just become members of this private club. There's a small yearly fee of $25, makes them a member of this club, and then they are entitled to a share of that lease.
Okay.
And their share of the lease enables them to come out and get the food that is grown on the farm.
Oh, that's wonderful. So can you give us an overview of what happened at your farm in June of 2010?
In June of 2010, we It was June 2nd, actually the morning of June 2nd, 2010. The Ag Department showed up along with the local county health department. And they just wanted to do a nice inspection of our facility. And I refused to allow them to do that because we did not have any license issued by them. We had a grade A dairy producer license from the Ag Department, but that had nothing to do with our private facility where the members came and got their food. So I refused to allow them to enter the building, and so they made a few phone calls, and they had everything set up beforehand already, but they got a search warrant delivered, along with some of the local county sheriff deputies. Yeah, and they just entered the building and did a complete search and a survey of everything that was in the building. They took an inventory of all the food that was on the shelves, and then at last they put the yellow tape on the doors and put everything under an embargo. They actually said if anything gets moved off those shelves or gets moved around, it's a $5,000 for every day that embargo is violated. They checked out the milk in the bulk tank, took some samples, and also noted the quantity of the milk that was in the bulk tank, which was a few hundred pounds over a ton. Comes out to like between 300 and 400 gallons. They poured some blue dye into that to make sure that none of our members can drink it, or it was actually even our family wouldn't want to drink it with the blue dye in it.
So they actually poured dye into the milk
Yeah, they poured the blue dye into the 300 plus gallons of milk. So we had nothing. There's nothing else we could do with the milk. Just dump it out into the field. It's quite amazing what length they went to tie up this food. And so the whole whole ordeal lasted like 6-7 hours.
After they left, what did you do?
Well, we emptied the bulk tank because it was time to milk the cows again that evening. There was no other place to put the milk. We didn't ship milk anymore at that time. In January of 2010, we had given up our grade A producer license. We weren't shipping any milk to any dairy plant. We were just taking care of all our milk on our own. So there was no way, nothing else to do with the milk instead of outside of just dumping it out into the field. So that's what we did that night. We dumped all the blue-dyed milk out into the field and milked the cows again. I made a few phone calls. I didn't know how we were going to move forward. But I found out through phone calls and emails that we really had the support of all our members, people that normally came and got food. And through much prayer and meditation during the night, with only a few hours of sleep, we as a family came up with the conclusion that we would just risk whatever happened and tear the tape and let the families come and get their food. Because this food actually belonged to the other families. I mean, they were just as much a part of this almost as we were. And according to the agreement that they had signed, I could have been bombarded by, over 100 lawsuits if I didn't follow my part of the agreement and give them the food that belonged to them. So we were pretty well between a rock and a hard place at that time.
And then what happened next?
6 o'clock the next morning, we ripped the tape. And that went out on the internet. It was all over the world in a few minutes. And we just had a big raw milk party that day. People came from as far away as 2 hours away. Other farmers came by, and we just had a big party on the farm here. People showing their support of what we were doing and how we were moving forward. It was all very impressive. How people reached out. The news media was here all day long, and it just felt good to feel all that support. Whatever we needed, people were there and just showed us that they're willing to stand behind us, whatever it takes to go through this. But it was, as far as communicating with the state, they came back during the month of June. They came back a few times to try to enter the building to get evidence to make a case out of the whole thing. And we denied them access until July 8th of 2010. They came with a whole army of sheriff deputies, and they entered the building by force that time and confiscated all the business records, the computer, the hard drive, and everything they could find that would, you know, try to help them make their case against us and what we were doing. So from then on, it was just they were on one hand trying to make a case, and we were on the other hand feeding our community. And that's the way it went until November of 2011, when they filed the charges, which was almost like a year and a half later.
And what were those charges, Vernon?
There was four charges that they finally ended up filing. We actually did find in the records, going through the trial and all the exhibits, we did find a 42-count criminal complaint that they had written up at one time and presented it to our local county DA, district attorney. And the local county district attorney refused to file charges. She said, this farmer threw nothing wrong, let him go. So the Ag Department didn't give up. They presented the case to the Justice Department, Wisconsin State Justice Department, and they ended up with a 4-count criminal charge. There were 3 licensure violations. There was a retail food establishment license, dairy producer license, and also the dairy plant license. I was in violation of those 3 licenses. And then the 4th count was the holding order violation, you know, just breaking the holding order that they had put in place.
Okay, so then you got the farm-to-consumer legal defense fund involved?
At that time, they were not involved. I was a member of their organization.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, when the charges got filed, I actually represented myself for a half a year before they finally got involved. And it was not that, you know, they were slow in coming or anything like that. It was just, you know, my way of, you know, kind of feeling this thing through and seeing what the Lord would have us do. And I just felt led to just represent myself and kind of see where the case is going to go before we just go right in and get a lawyer and, you know, go all out and fighting this case.
Mm-hmm. And
from my religious beliefs, I wouldn't take anybody to court. I wouldn't sue anybody. Yeah, I just felt very, you know, I just wanted to feel this thing out a while before we get any lawyers involved.
And how was that for you?
As far as doing it myself,
yeah.
You're asking?
Yes.
Well, it was very stressful. Every time I went to court, I got beat up. The judge was upset by what I was doing. They wanted lawyers in there who know what's going on and know how to argue a case. So finally, when the pressure became so hard on our family, I mean, it really affected our family life. We're just doing it ourselves, trying to study and get ready for court. When it finally became so hard, the pressure on the family life and communication in the family and things like that, I just felt led to the Lord, by the Lord, to accept the help from the Farmer to Consumer Legal Defense Fund. They stepped right in. They actually hired a criminal lawyer from Madison because the farmer to consumer lawyers were not at all familiar with the criminal case, the criminal law. So they hired a criminal lawyer from Madison, Glenn Reynolds, and he really stepped in. He believed in what we were doing, and he just did an awesome job in helping out. And when everything was said and done, he actually basically did all the work during the trial, the questioning and everything. So he did an awesome job through it all.
How long a process was it as far as from the time, you know, you actually got the Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund involved to the conclusion, which we'll talk about in a little bit? What time span was that?
They got involved in June of 2012.
Okay.
And then we had some more preparation to do for the trial. The trial got postponed a few times. And it finally got postponed to May 14th of 2013. And then the trial was scheduled for a whole week, for 5 days.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole thing looked so complicated, I couldn't figure out how we're going to get everything done in 5 days. But until everything was said and done, the state actually took until Thursday noon to present their case, and we had only a day and a half left to go. So we just quickly went through our witness list. We crossed out a lot of them, made our story short and sweet. And Friday night, the court went into overtime, and we got done at around 6 o'clock. We got done defending the case on our side.
So that had to be pretty stressful for you and your family, not only emotionally, but my guess is monetarily.
Oh, very much so. I mean, there's no way you can properly manage a business, a farm, or anything like that if you're under such stress. You know, you never know what day they're going to show up and, you know, put the dad in jail. And there's no way you can function properly in managing a business if, you know, things like that are hanging over your head. So, yeah, the farm suffered quite a bit. There's a lot of things where we need improvement now that things have calmed down and quieted down, where we can get back to the normal life. So, yeah, that's been a big financial loss.
Yeah, I can imagine. But it sounds like you've had a lot of support, you know, from people even like Joel Salatin and the Weston A. Price Foundation, as far as just behind you in what you're doing, along with a lot of people across this country.
Yeah, it has been very amazing to me to see how people step up, and especially since we had the fire a few weeks before the trial. You know, people I've never heard of, you know, they make generous donations and help in whatever way they can. Some people can't even help monetarily, but, you know, they can help rally the troops and get other people involved and get publicity for the case, and that helps. That helps a great deal, just to get the word out and let people know what's going on here.
So let's talk about the fire. You had a fire at the farm. Tell us what happened there.
We had this big machinery shed where all our machinery was stored in. And we also had a two-story chicken house built into the machinery shed, where it was just in the early spring, just before the chicken and everything would have flown out into the field. One morning at 2 o'clock, we awoke and the whole thing was engulfed in flames. So we had like 1,600 birds all burned, and all our farm equipment was burned to ashes, plus the building. And so actually, as far as farm equipment is concerned, we were down to a wheelbarrow. We had nothing larger than a wheelbarrow concerning farm equipment.
What was the cause of that fire?
Well, it started in the area. We had an inspector come in, and it looked like it started in the area of small chicks where we had a heat lamp on them for heat, because it was still fairly cold outside during the night. So that's all we know. It started in that area. I mean, there's a lot of people that say, oh, probably somebody with arson or something like that, but we don't like to go there. It started in that area, so we assume that's the cause.
Mm-hmm.
Continue on that way.
And so you have been doing some, there's been some fundraisers around this to help you raise some money to rebuild your farm. Is that correct?
Yeah. People have done very well. I have a committee of local farmers. They're put on a committee where we got together last spring and we decided what pieces of equipment that we need right now to continue operation, and also as far as building needs. And we came up with the amount of $55,000 is what it would take to get going last spring. And it took us 3 months just from online donations and, you know, people looking at the case. Donating money. It took us 3 months until we were already at $55,000. So the goal for this fall, for some more pieces of equipment and another building, is another $50,000. In the last few weeks, just from the fundraising efforts that have been going on, we are about a quarter. We have already raised about a quarter of that for this fall.
And how can our listeners help? Where can they go to get involved or help with donations or just with anything?
The best way to help is to go on our website. It's vernonhirschberger.com. And there's quite a few different ways that people can help. There's even if you just want to contact us, there's a contact page where you can contact us by email. People can get our address by request and send a check. They can donate online. And also another place that would be very important to help in this whole idea of food is the Farmer to Consumer Legal Defense Fund. This whole case will cost them probably $60,000, not mentioning the appeal that we're going through on that fourth count. So they definitely need some help too. And also there's other farmers. There's Mark Baker in Michigan who's being bombarded by the state ag department to kill all his hogs. So there's a lot of farmers standing up. Just listen to the news and try to keep in touch and see what farmers are that can be helped. It's not only us that need help.
Why do you feel like you were targeted?
Well, from people calling in, we had a lot of members call the Ag Department a day or two after the first raid on June 2nd of 2010. From what we got, what we learned from that is we were the next farmer on the list. They had already shut down two farmers in Wisconsin, and we were the next one on the list. We were supposed to close our doors.
Why do they feel so threatened by the whole raw milk sales or even giving away? Or what do you think the underlying motive is behind this? Do you have a theory about this?
Yeah, I definitely do have a theory or a few of them. I think maybe the number one is that it is such a healthy food that the drug companies are behind this whole thing, and they don't want something like that out on the market where people can turn to an alternative food that will keep them away from the drugstore. And then number two is another competition-related issue is, you know, the big dairy industry. From the statistics that I have read, the pasteurized milk consumption is declining by 3% every year in the United States. And I guess farmers like me who are doing raw milk get the blame. We are competing and they're losing out. And I don't really feel that's the case. The case is that, you know, there's more and more people who get sick and can't tolerate the pasteurized milk. There are probably 60 to 70% of our members that get milk here on the farm cannot tolerate pasteurized milk. They get sick. Some have lactose intolerance and some have, you know, other issues. And probably 90 to 95% of those, if they can't get raw milk anywhere in the world, they won't drink pasteurized milk. So really, we're not competing. We're just feeding people what they have to have in order to live.
Right, and I had Mark McAfee on my show several months ago, and I shared this with him, and I'll share this with you, is that I thought I had a milk allergy, and I realized I had a pasteurization allergy, that I can do the raw just fine, and I think that's probably true for many people.
That is true for about 80% of the lactose intolerant people. They can handle raw milk, but they can't handle pasteurized milk. And that's showing up more and more. And I think that's the big issue, that they have a 3% decline in pasteurized milk consumption per year, is people's bodies are reacting to this pasteurization and the homogenization, and they can't tolerate it anymore. So they look for alternatives. So, you know, there's a lot of people that go to almond milk, soy milk, and all those. It's not just raw milk that is the other option.
Right. Well, you know, I agree with your thoughts about the drug companies. I mean, that makes a lot of sense. You know, their motive is profit and keeping people sick so they can sell their drugs. So raw milk, you know, if it's used and it's people actually become healthier, that's going to affect their bottom line.
That's correct.
Which is really a shame. But, you know, I love your story because, you know, you're not a big, huge, you don't have, you know, several hundred thousand acres and, you know, you're a small farmer and you, the little guy, you know, took on the corporations. And I really applaud you for doing so. And in this act of what I call civil disobedience, which I think is we need to do from time to time. You know, we need to stand up and say, no, that's not okay. And I'm really glad that you did this. And I'm also very, very happy that you had the amount of, there's a lot of public outcry around this, and a lot of people know about this, so education is the key.
That's right, yes. If people find out about what's going on, they stand up and help out. I guess I kind of disagree with that statement. Basically, all I did is just stand up and say no. I didn't take them on in a battle, or, you know, they took me to court. I don't believe in taking anybody to court. I really believe very strongly in non-resistance, as the Bible teaches it. And I just said no. And then they took me to court, and this is how it all ended. I mean,
right, and that's what I meant, is that you just, yeah, you really had the wherewithal, that you just kind of followed your gut and your family, and you got together, and you just said, no, this is not right, and you did what you thought was right.
That's right, yes. I just stood here, and if they would have put me to jail, that's where I would have gone. I mean, I just couldn't do anything else. I couldn't, this is what I felt led to do, and regardless what the outcome, this is what I have to do.
So I just want to go back to the trial just briefly. And you were found guilty on one of those counts.
That was the fourth count, breaking the seals on the holding order. The jury didn't have much of a problem saying that, you know, the operation we have here is not a retail food establishment. We don't need that license. It is not a dairy plant. We're just processing the milk and things for a private consumers, and it is not a dairy producing farm. It's just a dairy farm where people own their, you know, have a share in what they, you know, the animals and everything that's produced. So the licensure violations were not an issue at all. They freed me on those pretty fast. But the fourth one, a lot of the evidence was kept out of the trial, and the jury did not really see what was going on. So they couldn't find any means to free me on that charge. So they found me guilty on that one, because there had been an embargo placed. The yellow seals had been put in place, and I had broken them. I admitted that right on the stand. So they did not have any information. We weren't allowed to enter any information into the trial that would say it was unlawfully placed or anything like that. Nothing like that was allowed. So when the jury got home, the night at, you know, Friday nights at 1 o'clock, and the Saturday mornings, they, you know, they immediately went on the news, and they investigated what really was going on in this case, because their eyes had just been kept closed. They had been kept in the dark much of the evidence that had been going on, and they just couldn't believe what they had done to this farmer, finding him guilty of breaking a holding order like that. So there was really nothing, you know, they couldn't reverse the charge or anything like that. So we have made very good friends with about half a dozen of the jurors, and it's been a real blessing just to, you know, talk with them and getting to know them better.
Oh, that's wonderful. And what will your defense be on the appeal of this fourth count?
The lawyers got all that together. I am not exactly sure what all has been brought up.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the main issue is that all the evidence was not allowed to be put into the trial that should have been there. I was not allowed to, you know, present my case properly.
Okay. And when will that be heard? Do you have any idea?
I don't know. I mean, that could take a year or a year and a half until, you know, they get to my case.
Well, we wish you well on that. I have a good feeling about it. So let's talk about the documentary you're involved with.
Okay. I guess I'm not really, yeah, I'm involved, but maybe just same way as the case. I'm not pushing it. I'm not really promoting it very heavily. It's just David Gumbert from New York. He's a blog writer and really follows these issues and cases all across the country. He got the idea that he'd like to do a documentary on our court case, you know, how the whole proceeding went, the raids and everything that took place on the farm, and, you know, just how we, you know, how we stood up, and I guess how the Lord provided for us through all of these things that we went through. So he is looking for donations, and getting funds together to just do a full-blown documentary on everything that happened.
And that's on your website also, Vernon?
There's a little bit of that information on the website. We do have a short documentary called Let Them Eat Grass. That is just on the verge of being released. But this new documentary would be a whole different story.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, they're just getting ready to, get the trailer together and, get more donations to do the real work of getting the documentary together.
The documentary, Let Them Eat Grass, that is just basically going to be about raw milk and grass-fed cows, or what is that going to be?
Yeah, that's basically about, grass-fed cows and the milk and things that we produce here on the farm.
Okay. And who's doing that documentary?
That is headed by a doctor, not exactly sure what his name is, Andy Mastercola, one of our members,
mm-hmm.
is in touch with a doctor from Chicago who's heading that and getting it all put together.
And can you give our listeners your website one more time if you want to help the farm, or if you want to just go find out more information about what happened? And there's lots of information on the website. What is that again, Vernon?
That's VernonHirschberger.com.
Okay.
And that's our family website. We don't use it a lot to promote our business or anything like that. We just set it up so people can help if they want to help, and they can follow the case. Or, there's a lot of different things that just kind of use it as a family website.
Okay. And don't you have an event coming up, a fundraiser type event coming up?
Yes, we do. Saturday in a week, August 17th. Some of our members and also the jury members that sat on the jury during the trial, some of them wanted to come out and spend the day on the farm. So we decided to have an ice cream social. And just invite everybody out to the farm for ice cream and, just an enjoyable time of getting together and getting to know each other better. And one of the members came up with the idea of having a fundraising auction on the same day. So, things just started coming together. And it seems things are just rolling in. We're getting new donations for the auction every day. Things are really, really seem to be piling up. It looks like a very successful and good day way things are coming together.
Great. And if people are in your area, is it open to the public, or how can they attend?
Yeah, it's definitely open to the public. This is not just a members only thing. This is kind of our way to reach out and, let people know what we do. So the whole thing is open to the public. And as far as, the auction is going to be held live here on the farm, but we are setting up where we can live stream the auction on the computer, and then people can place bids online for any of the items that are to be sold. So anybody can be involved.
Oh, great. And when are those auction items up yet?
There is a page on our website that's actually called Auction Items.
Okay.
And there's a listing of all the items that we have. Have been donated so far.
Great. Well, that's wonderful, and that's just another way that people can help.
That's right, yeah.
Well, I know you will be happy to have all of this behind you, but I certainly again applaud you for just doing what you thought was right.
Well, as I always say, we'll keep trying.
Okay. Well, thank you, Vernon, for taking the time out of your busy day to chat with us today. And we followed it quite a bit and just wanted to talk with you personally about your story and, just let more people know about what happened.
Yeah, I think it's important for people to know what happened to us and also to look around and support local farmers in their own areas who are going through hard, tough times. Maybe if farmers get more support before things get so bad, farmers won't need as much support as we did, when the state came out and tried to shut us down and all that. So I think it's important for everybody in their own neighborhood to step up, buy local, support the local farmers, know where the food is coming from, and know what's involved in growing the food and preparing the food. I think that's very important.
Well said, Vernon, and I agree wholeheartedly. So thank you for being a guest on our show, and thank you to all our listeners. And if you want to go help or just find out more about Vernon Hershberger and his family farm, go to vernonhershberger.com, and there's information on there about everything we talked about. And thank you, all our listeners, and we will be back next week with another great show. Have a great week.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you.